Spirit Blade Underground, episode 460. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 450.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter France, and from Spirit Blade Productions, obviously bored out of my mind trying to keep myself interested here. The crap just happened. Producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. I wonder if Jesus told many jokes. You know, just thinking about me going off the rails in the context of wanting to live increasingly for Christ. And I gotta think that he laughed. But I wonder, maybe it wasn't too relevant to include non-teaching punchlines. You know, certainly in the Bible you can find like some sarcasm and some humor and stuff like that. But anyway, maybe that's me just trying to excuse myself from going off the rails. Anyway, on the show today, I don't even know why I'm wasting time. This show is going to be way too big, way too long. Let's get to it. The Summer of Free begins this week. Hear all about our new plans for the summer-long event if you stick around. Hear all about our new... Man, I didn't... I'm reading straight from the description of the episode, and usually that's different from what I actually say to you guys. I was still on autopilot there. Anyway, I'm going to be telling you about our new plans for the summer-long event that we do each year. And then I'm also, or maybe I should just continue reading what's on the description here. Pater also introduces the Retro Rewind podcast and talks with them about the spiritual themes found in Last Action Hero. That was a really cool and fun conversation, so I look forward to sharing that with you guys. Winston Crutchfield is going to be taking us into the long box again with some post-apocalyptic Scooby-Doo. And I'm also going to be talking about the video game that radically changed my gaming life as I resume my bookshelf tour. A very late cut from the program was the In Search of Truth segment this week. I had it all prepped and ready to go, and I just realized, crap, this show is going to be way too big, way too long. Next week's show is going to be pretty long, too, but if there's room for it, I thought, well, it'll probably won't be as long next week as this week, so I'll just bump In Search of Truth to next week rather than... I think In Search of Truth will be back next week, but there just wasn't quite practical room for it today in terms of how, like, the absolute limits. I know it's podcasting. I could do a three-hour show. Plenty of people do, but I don't know. I kind of like to pace myself a little bit and try to keep the length somewhat consistent. Anyway, so that's what's going on this week. I hope we have time before your listening device runs out of power and the world burns out. Or it's not going to burn out. It's going to go, don't they say it's going to eventually like freeze or whatever? I don't know. God's going to do something. It's going to probably be spectacular.
Rejoice, ye penny-pinching nerds! Rejoice! For this is a season unbound by our bank accounts, unfettered by fees. A legendary age of liberty. This is the Summer of Free!
Hey, I'm Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com, and once again, the Summer of Free has begun! Once again, at Christian Geek Central, we're going to spend the summer encouraging responsible stewardship of our finances by putting a spotlight on free geek entertainment that you can take advantage of. So we're talking about movies, video games, anime, and other stuff, too. And as a new event, I'm advocating and celebrating the Great Backlog Burning, which is a four-week challenge that you can choose to take on anytime between now and August 9th. Here's how it works. During the consecutive 28-day period of your choice, and that's 4 weeks long, you commit to spending $0 on entertainment for yourself. Instead, enjoy the entertainment that's already part of your collection. That means no tickets, no rentals, no purchases of any kind, but we'll help you enjoy some great free geek entertainment alternatives to help give your bank account a break. If you're successful after 28 days, let me know via email or comment, and your name will be celebrated right here at the end of the Summer of Free, at which time you'll also get to choose a free digital product download of your choice from spiritblade.com. Now, I can't afford Spy Satellite rental, so this is all on the honor system, but my personal great backlog burning of 2017 is going to be running from July 12th through August 8th, so you're welcome to hold me accountable and cheer me on. In preparation for that, I will be hosting a live stream on Friday, June 23rd from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific, during which I'm going to dive into my backlog of video games and see what neglected treasures I can enjoy again. Also new this year is our partnership with the Retro Rewind podcast, co-hosted by Francisco Ruiz, who recently provided his trial and error review of the video game Little Tanks. Each month this summer, the Retro Rewind podcast is hosting a live hangout that you can be a part of if you want to discuss the spiritual themes in a geek genre movie that you can watch for free. When the movie for the month is chosen, we'll post a link for it at summeroffree.com and christiangeekcentral.com, along with info on how and when you can join that Google Hangout to talk about it. We've actually already gotten off to a head start with this for the month of May, featuring a movie that I think was way ahead of its time, but your chance to watch it for free will be vanishing soon. So go to summeroffree.com right now to find out what that movie is, and then sign up for the Hangout if you'd like. Then stay tuned right here. I'll be sharing tips and resources throughout the summer to help you geek out for free. And if you want to get started right now, we've archived previous Summer of Free resources over at summeroffree.com. So go check it out now and start geeking out for free! I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and now the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com. In the meantime, I want to introduce you guys to the hosts of the Retro Rewind podcast. I recently sat down and talked with them and actually recorded an episode of their podcast with them, talking about The Last Action Hero, which, spoilers, I know I kind of kept it a mystery during the Summer of Free, you know, thing I just did, but that's actually the movie for the month of May. There's not much time at all left to reliably be able to check that out for free at crackle.com, so if you're interested in checking that out, be sure you do that real soon. But anyway, we sat down and had a great conversation. Paul Powers, who's one of the co-hosts, was having a little bit of problems with his internet connection or his reliability in some form, and so you'll notice that he kind of cuts out, and I can't remember if it was in this conversation we got some laughs out of it or if we just kind of resigned ourselves to it by this point, but I remember we were... Oh man, just laughing in disbelief as we were recording that night. And so I can't remember if that's just in the stuff we recorded for their podcast or if that's going to be included here. But either way, I didn't do really any kind of monkeying and editing because I felt like in the end, really the core of what he's saying, even though, you know, every once in a while he's going to cut out and stuff, you're not missing, I don't think, anything essential as far as like what he was expressing. So anyway, I hope you'll be patient with some of those technical hiccups. It's not horrible. It's just like, oh, you know, every now and then. So anyway, but this was a really enjoyable conversation. And it's one of the reasons why I felt okay with dropping In Search of Truth for this week, because we're talking about the spiritual themes that popped out to us that could potentially be talked about after watching The Last Action Hero. So anyway, I hope you'll enjoy this kind of intro to them and their podcast and then our conversation about those themes. Yes. All right, I'm sitting here hanging out with Francisco Ruiz and Paul Powers, right, Paul?
Correct.
Okay, woohoo! Of the Retro Rewind podcast, and we're just sitting here recording actually an episode for the Retro Rewind podcast, but we're taking a little break here to talk about the Summer of Free and kind of like a partnership thingy-majigger that we're doing. But first, I wanted to give these guys a chance to just kind of tell us a little bit about the Retro Rewind podcast. Francisco, could you kind of give me the gist of what it is you guys are doing?
Absolutely. So we are a podcast. We've been around for about 5 years now. We just essentially take a look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago. So we'll rewatch or replay the movie or video game and kind of compare what we remember about it to how we re-experience it today. And we'll rate it whether we think it's a classic, like it still holds up really well and nostalgic, it kind of holds up, or a tragic, don't seek this game or movie out. So we do it every other week, and it's been a lot of fun. Covered a lot of movies, covered Predator with you, Peter, and Last Action Hero will be up here in a bit. So,
which was a lot of fun to do both of those. Paul, I was going to ask this earlier before we started recording, but like you're in California and in the LA area. Francisco, you're in, like you said, Portland. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you
Oregon, not Maine?
Okay, I didn't know there. I thought there was just the one.
No.
So how do you guys know each other?
Sorry, I was trying to think of a funny answer, but there is it. Well, we met in college down here.
Yeah, I used to live down in Southern California.
Okay.
And we both went to the same college, just got randomly paired up in the same dorm apartment, and that's how we met.
Cool. Okay.
So all right. Definitely a God thing, I would say.
Sweet. Sweet. Well, I think what you guys are doing is really cool, and I really enjoy being a part of it when I'm able to. So let me actually, having said that, just hand the reins over to you, Francisco, and let you just kind of host the rest of this time and close us out when we're done and kind of lead our discussion here. We're going to get into some thematic things going on in the movie we just talked about. The Last Action Hero. So, okay, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, so essentially what our format's going to be is we each come with a question that sort of spiritually charged or comes from a spiritual place, like where we saw God in the movie or where we saw maybe evil in the movie. And just talking about it, sort of like if the type of conversation you'd like to have after you see a movie with a friend and go out to coffee or cake or something like that, or milkshake. And so that's
cake.
The kind of...
Yeah, I want to have cake next time I go out.
Yes.
Somebody.
Carrot cake or German chocolate or... Let's just get cake, guys. I think that sounds fun.
Yeah.
I'll start us off with the question I thought of watching Last Action Hero, and then we'll just go around likewise. After we discuss my question, each of you will get a chance to ask yours. We'll discuss, and that's how we'll go.
Cool.
So here is the question I had for you guys. In Last Action Hero, Slater, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, toward the end of the movie, after he's come into the real world, he has sort of a crisis of identity. He realizes he's this fictional character, and he's visibly upset about it. He says that all this bad stuff, like his kid dying, he has had nightmares every day because of it. But apparently he just sees himself as this fictional character. So apparently no one cares that he's having these nightmares. No one cares that he's having this tough life. And probably from his vantage point, he just barely survives each day. So that got me thinking, when crappy things happen in our own lives, do you hold those things as being part of God's plan? Like the writers of, what was it, Slater 4?
Yeah.
Those would be the plans for Jack Slater. Do we see God's plan, all that bad stuff that might happen to us in our lives, as part of God's plan? And does God seem just uncaring to put us through difficult seasons like that?
Yeah, you kind of stole mine, actually.
Wow. Good.
I have another one if you would like.
Well, yeah, maybe we can get to that. But that scene really jumped out to me as well, because a number of years ago in a theology textbook. Oh, is Paul you? You
Paul,
there?
Your bandwidth in again. Sorry.
Okay, I'm just gonna start railroading here. While Paul catches up, poor guy. It reminded me of an illustration that was in a theology textbook I read a number of years ago, where the view of an illustration of a Calvinistic type of view of the sovereignty of God compared us and God to characters in a play written by Shakespeare. You know, and that in the context of the play, Hamlet has choices. He absolutely has choices. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of on this lower level. And then on the higher level, we have God, who is completely writing the story, and he is in control of those choices. Mm-hmm. Now, I do not hold to that hard of a Calvinist view, but it came to mind with this scene where he's like, this is all, I didn't have any control over this. All this, you know, was just kind of brought to me. And so that was going to be my question, is like, you know, how do you guys feel about that view of like, of God being a playwright and us just being characters and our choices and circumstances? Well, I don't want to say circumstances, but our choices, we don't even really quite have control over those things, or, you know, what's your view, and how do you feel about the whole issue of like the sovereignty of God? Do you see him as a playwright, or do you see that metaphor falling short, or, you know, what are your thoughts on that? So for me, it falls short. I go back to a great book written by Hugh Ross, who applies what we're learning about higher dimensionality to the interaction between God's sovereignty and our free will, and how the higher dimensions allow for both God's sovereignty and our choices to both be in full effect and neither compromising or infringing on the other. And really, part of the reason he comes to that conclusion is because Scripture seems to teach both. It just doesn't tell us how exactly to reconcile them. And so he's attempting to reconcile them by appealing to what we're learning about dimensionality. So anyway, those blah, blah, blah. Those would be my thoughts just on kind of like as I wrestle through that mind bender that this movie kind of inadvertently implies.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Paul? I'm curious. I want to hear your thoughts.
All right, this is where it gets, well, this, all right, fine. I'll go ahead and put it out there, because this is free will versus, you know, that's what we're talking about here?
Free will versus predestination.
We can say predestination. Yeah, I kind of want to say that's popularly how it's talked about. I kind of want to say free will versus God's sovereignty is sometimes how they're pitted against each other. Like the idea that
God is sovereign whether we have free will or not, but God gave us free will, so those both coexist, like you said.
Yeah.
I've almost always been under the belief of. There's about 66% free will and 66% predestination, where it kind of overlaps there. You know?
And so 66 and 66, that seems like 112%.
Yeah, but that's only if they don't overlap.
Oh, okay.
I got that.
Not really, but okay. Continue. <I'm...
laughs> Okay, it might be 75%. Might. 100%. I don't know. What victory? It VeggieTales.
Yes.
You can't get controversial with that, right?
No.
Well, they put out this. I'm calling them out here. They put out this. One of their videos is called "It's a Meaningful Life," and it's a take on "It's a Wonderful Life."
Yeah. Yep.
And it's basically, why do bad things happen? Well, bad things happen, you know, to put us through trials. And basically, Larry longs for a different life, And he realizes, no, that was the life I was supposed to have because I was able to grow. And I think that's a load of hogwash because Larry has free will as far as the way I understand if the theology is to be the same on that show as it is in our life.
Sure.
but it all goes down to like, okay, God's will is that everyone is saved. That's his sovereignty. That's his will. But no, in fact, we know that wide is the gate that leads to destruction. And very few people find the narrow gate that leads to eternal life.
Yeah.
So it's up to us to use that gift of free will to find him. And it's not like, oh, whatever happens is God will. Yeah. God's will. No, there's a lot of bad things happening because of free will. Do it and those that let it happen. And just to throw your hands up in the air and say, oh, there's a lot of bad stuff happening. That must be God's ordination. That's his predestination that all that happens. Well, no, it's not. He wants the opposite. So I'm in the camp of if that's a load of baloney that that we can't do anything about. Our life is our life preordained. God knows the choices we're going to make. So that is foreknown. In that sense, that is preordained, but it's 100% our choice to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, can he stop us? Yes, he can, and we can make choices how to go around that or go a different direction, but we still have 100% free will.
Yeah, I'm
sorry
that was cool.
I'm going to play, so first level set for me, the playwright metaphor, for some reason I heard that attributed to C.S. Lewis. I'm not sure why.
Oh, okay.
But,
yeah, maybe.
But I have heard that before, and that is kind of how I generally think about God's rule over us. Mm-hmm. But to play devil's advocate, in terms of, you said, Paul, how, well, free will is the our own free will and us choosing evil and just evil in the world. That's why the bad stuff happens. But, I mean, and you were kind of getting there. God, if God decided to not let that stuff happen, he could not let that stuff happen because he's God. So why doesn't he just let everything not happen?
That's a different question. You're questioning because no. Oh wait, or is this your question versus Peter's question? Are you jumping the subject?
Is
pain worth it? Talking about the price of pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole different ball of whack.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. I do want to say, though, that I think how I see the metaphor, I'm not familiar with the different dimensionality aspect, but I'm curious if this sort of aligns with what you're trying to say, Paul, that I almost see God as the director as opposed to the playwright. I mean, he's the playwright and director, I guess you could say. But he wants us to, as the actors, to discover, if something comes to us like, oh, let me try this, God. Okay, try that. Let's see what happens. I mean, he knows what's going to happen, but he wants us to be part of the creative process with him and co-create in our own small way. I feel like that's one of the things that one of the reasons we're in the image of God is our creativity is part of that image bearing that we have. And so that's why I think that's how I envision it, that if God's like, no, I really, you can't do that. That's not part of the plan. Sorry, Francisco, you are not going to take down Satan. I don't know why you ever got that cockamamie idea, but you're not doing that. Okay. All right. Fine. God, I guess I won't do that.
So in that illustration, are we actors or characters?
I think, that's an interesting point. I guess, you know what? I think we are actors.
It'd be actors.
Because
that's what it sounded
our,
like.
Our glorified selves are the real us. I mean, we are poor reflections of essentially who we're trying to play. Like, we're trying to play...
Wait, actors have choices where characters do not.
Actors,
they
have
are pre-.
Yeah.
Oh! I wasn't thinking about it in those terms, but yeah, okay. So yes, actors then, because I think
gotcha.
We do have choices. Yes.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of me and Peter's question. It sounds like we may have. I have another one I might throw in. But Paul, what question did you bring to the table?
Do we have time?
I think so.
I got time.
Okay. Just making sure. All right. So in the movie, his daughter.
His daughter.
Meredith.
Yes.
Whitney. Mark on her cheek as she was being ruffled around with. So my question to you is, when Jesus speaks of turning the other cheek, like in Luke 6, verse 29, it says, if someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them also the other. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. To what extent do you take that verse in your own life?
Ooh. I know for me, I'm very fortunate in that I don't, I mean, it's, I guess, a blessing and a curse, that I'm not faced with a lot of persecution or a lot of people that are trying to beat me down just in general, or because I'm a Christian. So I'm glad for that, but I'm also in this sort of comfortable spot where I can't grow in that area of my life. So that's,
I'm talking physically. One were to come up to you,
okay,
and like invade your room, like in this situation.
Oh, okay.
In the movie,
so just hypothetically, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think if it's just me, I would probably practice closer to what Jesus is saying. But if my family's in the room, I would probably be more defensive to defend them.
Yeah, and I would. I mean, I'd have to look at the. I'd have to look at the context. You know, I always hate to try and like off the cuff, like do biblical exegesis. You know, but I mean, like, I would think that would be kind of the idea or the premise. You know, the mm-hmm. assumption of Jesus in that is like we're talking about you and your character and what's going on isolated. You know, with you, mm-hmm. and so yeah, I would be with you. I think on that, Francisco. I mean, if someone came into my house. I think I would fail, whether or not it's what Jesus intended or not, I think I would fail to offer them my other cheek if they took a crack at me, you know? But I mean, I think what I would want to do is try and, in the moment, not be a force of resistance and try in that moment to how can I have a voice in their life? Okay, how can I just, you know, let them get out of their system what they need to so that we can hopefully get to a place of reason? It's like, okay, you want to like... You want to smash my stuff or you want to like, you know, take my stuff. Okay. Hey, here, tell, you know, what's going on here? What's this about? You know, if I can somehow give up rights of mine or stuff of mine to gain some level of a voice in their life, that's what I would want to try and do.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that's the intent. Is my character strong enough for that? I don't think so. I mean,
yeah,
I think I would need an invasion of the Holy Spirit in that moment to really help me have the presence of mind and the humility of heart to just give myself over to what God is doing in that. But it would take totally a work of the Holy Spirit to make that happen for me in the moment.
Yeah. How about you, Paul?
This has honestly been a struggle for years. So much so that I don't really think about it that often. It's like, well, I'll figure that out later. it gets really confusing for me because like in Matthew 5, the corresponding passage on the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew goes in a little more detail. He says that if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn them also the other. And going that, and you may have heard that people are right-handed, to be actually slapped on the right cheek would actually be a backhand, and that was more of an insult.
Yeah.
So when someone insults you, you know, let them, you know, don't worry about it. But if he's not actually talking about if somebody actually physically And so I've kind of wrestled, well, how true is that? Is that just someone trying to feel good, make themselves feel better with that explanation? Or is that actually true? You know, it's like how far, and I've kind of questioned this with God through the years, like how far am I tested in this, and I hope I never will be, but it's one of those that I've honestly I've struggled with, like how I know there is a time for war and there is a time for peace. There's a time to fight and there's a time not to. And I think the answer is what you said, Peter, is waiting for the Holy Spirit to come and guide you during each situation. So, but as a default, it's showing the love of Christ, how either by protecting or offering help. I don't know. So yeah. I was just throwing that out there with you. That's, I don't think.
Yeah, that's hard.
And I'm curious, and we might end it with this, but jumping off of that and going back to Last Action Hero, a different scene toward the beginning where Danny opens the door and is about to leave for the midnight screen, but then the robber comes in. And he gets him, Danny, in the bathroom and puts the knife on the sink and turns around and says, take it. Take a shot. I'm curious, what do you guys do? What do each of you do?
Oh, and so, totally shank him.
you shank him? Is that what you said?
I'd have to, like, in the moment, just kind of make that call in the moment. Like, how far is he from the knife? How far am I from the knife? You know? But I think I've just kind of heard the advice over the years that the chances are in those kind of situations, you're not going to be allowed to live, and you should kind of operate based on that assumption. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of have this idea that I would go into this panicked, psychotic frenzy.
Yeah. Berserker rage.
Yeah. Nothing bold or brave about it. Just like a panicked, psychotic, frenzy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think I'm of two minds. If I happen to be trained in knife fighting, then I would take the knife and use it. Otherwise, I would take the knife and get rid of it so it's out of the equation and it's just a matter of, like, fists or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You're in a closed bathroom. It won't flush down the toilet. What do you mean get rid of it?
I think there's a window right behind him.
Yeah, but for him to, let me stand up on the bathtub, crank the window open while this guy's back is still turned. I don't think it's that easy, but
all right, fine.
Well, I threw it in the trash can, can't find it.
Oh my goodness. Well, this has been an awesome conversation, guys. You know what? I would love to have more of this type of conversation. And you know what? We're actually going to be launching this as the Summer Free Movie Club. We are going to be actually having a discussion on Last Action Hero, which you can currently watch now at crackle.com. It's for free. There are ads. Take my advice. Here's what my experience was. Watch it on your computer. Yes, it may be compelling to watch it off your Blu-ray player, but because there's ads and sometimes the ads overload the programming on your device, you will have to restart the movie several times. Oof. And skip ahead several times. So don't do that. Just watch it on your computer, maybe your phone. If your phone's awesome, maybe that will work too. But do it that way. But you can watch it for free on crackle.com. And then we will be sending out a link. Let's see. Actually, go to summerfree.com. There will be a link to where you can find the link to a Google Hangout for June 3rd at 12 noon Pacific, where we have probably a max of 10 people. We'll come together and bring a question from Last Action Hero that you thought that came up about a spiritual theme that you saw in the movie, and we'll just have we'll continue this conversation, and that'll be a lot of fun.
Sweet. Well, thanks you guys so much. And I'll definitely be making sure that all of the listeners of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast are kept up to speed on that hangout and anything else you guys do related to cool, free, geeky movies that people can watch and interact with you guys about for the rest of the summer. So thank you both very much for just kind of partnering with us and having some fun with free, geeky movies this summer.
Awesome. And thank you so much, Pear, for letting us partner with you. This would be great.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
This week at ChristianGeekCentral.com, the Retro Rewind podcast has posted episode number 119 featuring The Emperor's New Groove. Then over at SummerOfFree.com, there's the post regarding the May Retro Rewind podcast's Summer of Free Movie Club movie, and the hangout link. So anyway, if you want to watch the movie Last Action Hero, and if you want the link to get your ticket for the free hangout to talk about it, go over to summerofree.com. At youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, I put up my video entitled Arg Stickers and Roleplay Stats, which is part 8 of my solo playthrough of the board game Gloomhaven. Even if you don't know anything about that board game, I kind of try to create these videos really for anybody to just enjoy me enjoying the theme and just throwing myself into this game, even though I suck at it. It's a game that's a lot of fun to kind of draw the theme out of and just enjoy that aspect of it. So even if you don't have any interest in board games, but you just kind of, you know, want to see somebody geeking out for a little while and having fun, then that's something that you can check out. And then also I've put up the first part of a new video series that I'm doing on the themes, the philosophical and spiritual themes of the video game Horizon Zero Dawn, which has been like a big kind of hot game for a while. It's a PS4 exclusive, but that is the console that more people have than not of the new consoles that are available. And so anyway, it's been selling like freaking hotcakes. I mean, it's really been kind of a hot property. But there are a ton of spoilers in my conversation about it. I'm not like intentionally going through the plot of the game, but to talk about some of the themes on the level that I want to talk about them, I really have to play some of the clips that are relevant to those moments and those themes, and that does give away some significant parts of the game. So that's definitely not a video you want to check out if you're, you know, wanting to remain unspoiled so that you can enjoy your playthrough of it. But if you don't plan on playing the game ever and don't care, or you've already played the game, whatever. If you don't care about spoilers, then enjoy the intro and the first episode. Excuse me, it's just kind of an intro to the series as a whole. It's going to be a 5-part series. And then the topic is artificial intelligence, which I've talked about a bit before with other, you know, movies and things like that on this podcast. But I get into some stuff that I don't think I've gotten into quite on with the same detail or kind of the same exact way of talking about it. So this game brings up some interesting, if typical, ideas about AI that I kind of offer a counterpoint to. So hopefully that's something you'll find interesting. Also, by the time you're listening to this podcast, you should be able to get my bookshelf tour, the video version of my bookshelf tour. So if you want to see images from the games that I'm talking about or video from the games that I'm talking about, then you'll be able to do that by watching the video. And then lastly, that Summer of Free kind of introduction and promo that I shared today on the podcast, there's a video version of that that's up at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And I want to invite you to actually share that on social media or with friends or something like that, that maybe trying to kind of save some money that you know of in your life. That could be a kind of a cool connection point for them to get them connected to what's going on at Christian Geek Central. Maybe they wouldn't otherwise be interested, you know, whether they're believers or not. You know, I hope that people will take advantage of this. Like I said, I think it hopefully is just a little subtle tool that you can use to connect either believers to what's going on at Christian Geek Central or non-believers to just what will hopefully be a good experience with Christianity at Christian Geek Central. So anyway, I just give that to you as a suggested resource for just kind of reaching out a hand to somebody else. And then while you're there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, any one of those three things would help to grow our community and that channel. What else? Oh, yeah. Okay, so I got to talk a little more quietly about this. I mentioned this last time. But before we're done celebrating the 10th, you know, the 10-year anniversary of Spirit Blade Productions, I would really love to get messages from those of you who have been affected in some kind of significant way by the ministry of Spirit Blade Productions or Christian Geek Central, but a message that's specifically to my wife, Holly. She has made it possible every day that I've been able to do this. She's the one that has made this possible. She works a job that she gets absolutely no fulfillment from. And in fact, recently it's become very stressful for her, and we hope that's going to be just a short-term season, but we're not sure. It might be a new status quo, but I would really just love for her to be encouraged by you guys right now. And so if Spirit Blade Productions or Christian Geek Central has had some kind of a positive impact on your life, I would love for you to send to me, but addressed to and speaking to Holly, a message thanking her for making all of this possible. You can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.com, and that's probably the best way to get that message to me. The deadline is going to be Sunday, June 25th. So you got a little bit of time, but if that's something you think you might do, please don't delay. Please get that to me quickly. I've heard from a couple of you so far, and it's just been wonderful, and I would love to, as much as possible, just kind of overwhelm her all at once with expressions of gratitude for her and what she has made possible through her daily grind in the job that she so faithfully takes on and is content to take on, so that I can do what I'm doing with you guys. So anyway, yeah, if you could send those to me, I'd be really grateful. Okay, that's it. Let's move on to the next thing.
Ah, it's finally here. It took years and cost me a fortune to track down this collection of the rarest sequential art collections in the world.
They're just comics, Dad. You got them from the very back of the clearance bin at the comic shop.
Just help me get the lid off.
I am the genie of the long box. I shall grant you 3 wishes.
I wish I could read comics in a modern form that lets me take as many as I wanted anywhere I want.
It is done. Henceforth, comics shall descend from the cloud directly into your mobile device.
I wish publishers would give away free books to promote the growth of the art form.
It is done. Henceforth, the first Saturday in May shall be known as Free Comic Book Day.
I wish someone who really loved comics would do a podcast and article series about them.
Very well. Then I shall take you into the long box.
I love Scooby-Doo. So when DC added a Scooby book to the Hanna-Barbera revival line, it immediately caught my attention. In Scooby Apocalypse, we get a glimpse of what it would be like if the Scooby gang met for the first time just as the world ended. It's a kind of sci-fi version of The Walking Dead, where the Mystery Inc. gang is cast as the survivors of a nanotech plague that transformed the whole world into monsters. The main characters are indeed named Fred, Daphne, Velma, Shaggy, and Scooby. They do indeed ride around in a green van they call the Mystery Machine. Their visual models even show inspiration from the classic characters. And there ends any resemblance to anything remotely Scooby-Doo.
Jeepers! Jinkies!
The original cartoon endures due to the formula of the mysteries and the chemistry of the characters. They're obviously tight-knit friends who work well together and look out for each other. The Scooby-Doo cartoon mysteries are some of the most well-crafted stories in the business, building on a series of action and character beats to reach a logical climax. The Scooby Apocalypse comic is instead a series of set pieces tied together through the use of common characters. It's actually the exact opposite of the cartoons in terms of story and character construction. In fact, exact opposite of Scooby-Doo is a pretty good way to describe this comic. The characters are caricatures of teen drama stereotypes that bear no resemblance at all to the classic characters. Fred is a cowardly, helpless, doe-eyed simp, unable to think for himself. Daphne is filled with a reservoir of bitterness and anger, married to a domineering and antagonistic mistrust. Velma is self-obsessed and socially non-functional. Shaggy is a prevaricating pacifist that waffles between apathy and anxiety with bipolar intensity. Scooby is used as both comic relief is not really the right word, attempt, perhaps, and as a deus ex machina plot device, and they constantly fight again amongst themselves. I've always found the Mystery Inc. gang endearing and likable, something impossible for the cast of this comic. Except for one brief moment in the first issue's backup story, Shaggy and Scooby are simply not interesting enough to evoke emotion from the reader, and I actively hate the other three with a side order of resentment for the time spent reading about them. I'd take a minute to describe the plot, but I've already summed it up. The gang fights and bickers with each other constantly, about everything, and with zero consistency of character. The book is little more than a series of set changes where the cast moves from scene to scene, continually sniping and being nasty to each other. I got sick of it very quickly. The rest of the book is a parade of gore, violence, and grotesquerie without reflection or purpose. Elements of the world seem to be presented solely for their shock value, without even the barest attempt at literary device. Issue number 6 set another distressing pattern for the book by spending the entire issue in a flashback that was meant to reveal Velma's involvement in the events that set off the end of the world. The resulting story belabored a clumsy and blatantly obvious plot point, while obsessing over Velma's inability to behave like a functional adult. Issue number 10 wasted the whole book exploring Velma's fetishistic power fantasies, without even attempting to be relevant to the rest of the series. We're less than a dozen issues into the series, and they've seemingly abandoned all pretense of telling a cohesive story in favor of finding increasingly shocking and offensive ways of portraying their main characters. The worst part of this is that writers Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis have continually and consistently turned out some of the best stories in comics literature. Giffen's work on Legion of Superheroes remains some of my very favorite stories ever. He handled a diverse cast of characters deftly, and through at least 3 incarnations that I've read, telling a variety of stories from lighthearted fun to deadly serious. Giffen also helmed Marvel's Annihilation event, telling a series of often brutal and occasionally touching war stories, and elevating characters such as Rocket Raccoon and Star-Lord from forgotten relics to fan favorites. DeMatteis first came to my attention during his run that concluded the first Ghost Rider series. Johnny Blaze's struggle against the demon literally inside of him resonated with me when I first read those books and continues to define for me the character of the Ghost Rider. His work on Captain America introduced me to Deathlok and the post-apocalyptic world of the Nth Command. His climactic battle between Cap and the Red Skull dug deep into the truly twisted depths of that villain. I was glued to the Spider-Man books when DeMatteis penned Kraven's Last Hunt, and later tortured Peter Parker with the loss of his friend Harry Osborn to the specter of the Green Goblin. Giffen and DeMatteis, of course, are unquestionably best known as a team for their creation of Justice League International, a book which postulated that superhero comics of the time were taking themselves far too seriously, and catapulted obscure characters such as Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, and Martian Manhunter into the mainstream. They proved that superheroes can be funny and likable and still deal with serious problems on a very human level. In fact, the Giffen and DeMatteis duo is pretty much my dream team for a story that casts Scooby-Doo and the gang as serious investigators in a world full of dangerous monsters, which makes this kind of epic failure baffling and disheartening. So what can we pull out of this dung heap? Is there anything here worth further consideration or discussion fuel? Not really. Velma confesses to being a central figure responsible for the nanite plague that transformed the world into monsters. Her primary defense is that she was trying to save the world and that others corrupted her work. But the book never follows up on the ethical question to any kind of resolution, nor does it even pretend to prompt the reader to do so on his own. Beyond that, I'm just writing off the series as an utter waste of my time and money. I usually cut books like this some slack, assuming they're meant for a completely different audience. In this case, I can't even imagine who that audience might be, as I can't imagine anyone voluntarily continuing to read this garbage. I give Scooby Apocalypse a quality score of terrible and a relevance score of just barely.
Incoming transmission.
Hey, Peter, it's me, Ben Avery from Strangers and Aliens. that podcast over there in the other corner of the Spirit Blade Underground networking system place. Yeah, you know who I am. Hey, I'm sending you this message because I just wanted to bring up 3 points that I don't know if it'll change how much you actually like Alien Covenant, but it might at least change how you look at Alien Covenant. And the first point is, you are absolutely right when you said there's just a whole lot of business decisions up on the screen. But at the same time, you can totally see where Ridley Scott was wanting to go with Prometheus, I think, because Prometheus was intended to be a trilogy. This movie was not supposed to be called Alien Covenant. It was supposed to be called Paradise Lost. And if you look at it as Paradise Lost, well, first of all, you can see that, okay, bring in more alien stuff, more recognizable alien stuff. And, you know, if you want to make this movie, then that's what you have to do. And Ridley Scott saying, okay, I want to make this movie, so that's what I have to do. But I also want to do the stuff with the engineers and stuff like that. But if you look at this whole Paradise Lost thing, and then you look at David as the creation, and I'm not going to get too much into, you know, spoiler details, but that does lead me a little bit to point number two, which is, you know, you said that the monsters don't scare you. And point number two for me is that this isn't really, I think, supposed to be a horror movie. It's promoted as a horror movie. They are definitely, you know, in all of the trailers and in all of the, you know, interviews and stuff, we're going back to that first movie. We're going back to that first movie. In the trailer, you see, we're going back to that first movie. In the movie, you see, we're going back to that first movie. They reference that first movie from stem to stern. They even reference Aliens a little bit. Remember this that you liked in Aliens? We're going to do it again. Remember this you liked in the first movie? We're going to do it again. But I think it's really just meant to be more just a sci-fi movie, like Prometheus, with strong horrific moments, if not, you know, a strong horror element. And then along with that monster not being scary for you. And again, I don't think this is going to change your mind, but it might at least give you a different angle to look at. I think you're looking at the wrong thing for the monster. You know, this movie, more than the other Alien movies, I think the monster is not the xenomorph. The xenomorphs are there. They are part of the territory. They are part of the horror of this unknown world. But the monster itself, I'm not going to spoil it. But maybe in my email, when I include this in, maybe I'll let you know what I'm thinking. But I think it'll be easier for you, easy enough for you to figure out what I'm talking about as far as what the monster actually is. And the xenomorph is a part of things with the monster. But, you know, in the first movie, the monster was the android. The monster was corporation. In the second movie, the monster was Paul Reiser. You know, I mean, obviously the monsters were the xenomorphs, and that was a big part of things. But a lot of alien movies, you know, we've seen the monster, and the monster is us. So, that's not what I'm saying about Alien Covenant. Still keeping it spoiler free as much as I can. I'm not saying that that's necessarily what they do there, but the monster is not, I think, meant to be the xenomorph. That's all I have to say. I don't know if it's going to change your mind, but I really liked Alien Covenant. I really like Prometheus. The Alien franchise for me is one that I like a lot. I have a long history with it. And, you know, if you listen to the most recent episode of Strangers and Aliens, where we talk about Alien Covenant, I talk a little bit about that. But this is the only movie franchise that ever gave me nightmares. It's the only movie franchise that I ever actually dreamed about. I did dream about Star Trek once, but that wasn't a nightmare. That was just, I was watching Star Trek in my dream. So there's that. Anyway, this is Ben Avery from StrangersandAliens.com signing off. And saying to everyone, Godspeed.
Ben, thank you for that. That's a really good perspective. Especially as I was reflecting on it, I was like, you know, I would not be surprised at all if I came back to this movie and ended up really appreciating it more than I did on the first run. Because that's been the case with at least two of the Alien movies. As some of you may have noticed or maybe haven't, this movie series, every movie is there's something very significantly different about it, you know. Maybe not always kind of like in the story. Well, the stories are pretty weird. They change up. I mean, the first one is like sci-fi horror. It's straight up, we're running from a monster. And the second one is like sci-fi action horror, you know, but it's definitely a lot more of an action movie than the first one was. And then the third one is, I don't know if I would call it cerebral sci-fi. It's very conceptual. It's just got some, you know, it's half of it is about the setting, you know, as opposed to just being about the creature. I mean, by the end of the second, by the end of Aliens, the second movie in the series, I feel like we kind of know this monster from top to bottom, as I said in my review of Alien Covenant. And what Alien 3 did, or Cubed, or however the crap you say that, was provided this new setting and used the creature, and didn't do a whole lot new with it, maybe a few little things, but used the same creature as a catalyst to kind of explore these issues of, if I remember correctly, just kind of like death and morality and, you know, life and what life is about. And there's just some interesting stuff. I found that especially the extended cut, which is the closest we're going to get to a director's cut on that one, because it was a really tortured production. I mean, gosh, if you have the DVD or the Blu-ray that goes into all the drama behind the scenes on that one, that's like almost as fun, or if not, you know, equally or more so as watching the movie itself. I mean, there was so much drama there. And so the director, of course, was not going to come back and, you know, do a director's cut. But they, using his notes and his script and stuff, they had people put together a cut that was, you know, as close as we could get to, you know, his intended vision based on the available footage, you know, that they had. So, but anyway, I really, Alien 3 might be my favorite one to watch. I'm not sure. But it wasn't at first. It wasn't. And part of that may be the director's cut, but I just think, you know, even more than that, it was just, I just saw it in a different light, you know, after watching it again years later. And same with Alien Resurrection, not as much as Alien 3, but Alien Resurrection I saw and I was like, this is just weird. It's all disturbing and somehow French flavored. I can't put my finger on it, but there was something weird about it. It was disturbing more than it was scary to me, and it still kind of had some of the action movie stuff in there, but it was just a very different flavor. And although that was kind of weird and unsatisfying at first, I really began to appreciate it for what it was when I came back to it years later. And so I can honestly say that, like all of these Alien movies, I enjoy them roughly the same. And so I'm wondering if the same will happen with Alien Covenant after I watch it again, especially since I didn't realize this when I did my review of that, of the movie last week, guys, but, and maybe you guys probably all knew this, but I guess there's like a ton of footage from this movie that was all put out on YouTube in kind of a promotional way to kind of introduce you to the crew and stuff. There's these kind of like character scenes and stuff. And like almost all of that was not in the movie. Not in the movie. Holy crap. And I didn't watch any of that stuff. I saw just little teeny clips as commentators were saying, boy, if this would have been in the movie, then da-da-da-da-da, you know. And I would see just seconds, snippets here and there of these scenes that were released. And I'm like, yes, that's the kind of scene I would have liked to have seen more of that might have helped. I don't know if it would have helped my issues with the back half or the back third of the movie, but anyway, Ben, I am totally open to seeing this movie in a new light, especially after, you know, kind of your perspective, and then as I reflect back on my experience with the previous Alien movies. As I said in my review, I definitely plan to buy it, at least for the first hour, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if after a second viewing, it grows on me as at least two of the other Alien movies have, in ways that I can't anticipate. So anyway, thank you very much for your perspective on that. Let's see here. Oh yeah, just as a reminder, guys, give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. Tell me, what should we keep, what should we change, or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone, just like maybe Ben. Well, Ben's got a microphone, he does his own podcast, the Strangers and Aliens podcast, which is part of the Christian Geek Central Network. But anyway, you can use a phone just as easily, record and send me an audio file to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, well, this is not based on anything that I saw on the forums, but I happen to know someone that is connected to the Christian Geek Central community that's going through some rough stuff right now, so I'd like to just briefly pray in line with what they've got going on and with what maybe you have going on or will have going on or have had going on. I think there's a sense in which any of us that are married can relate to what I want to pray about. So let's just pray briefly here. Jesus, we just pray for marriages. And we just recognize how little that concept is valued, despite the fact that it expresses some mystery about you, Jesus, and the church. And yet we just we don't invest in our marriages like we should. We don't invest in our marriages like you have invested in the church. And as a result of that, there's just mess, and there's conflict, and there's bitterness that can just develop over the course of a decade until it's just a mess that and there are scars, and we don't know how to heal from this. We don't know how to get out of this mess. And so we pray that you would rescue us from that, that you would steer us away from that so we don't even find ourselves in that situation. But as we may find ourselves there, we pray that you would remind us of your forgiveness, so that we, your tireless, relentless forgiveness, so that we have the freedom, we have the safety net of your grace to fall back on that will allow us to take the hard look at ourselves, so that even though it feels like the other person is 99% at fault, we can hold ourselves accountable to your standard of perfection, and we can have the freedom. The freedom, knowing that we are forgiven, we can have the freedom to take the hard look at ourselves necessary to see what we need to see about where we have fallen short, and so that we can do the part you are calling us to do to bring about reconciliation. And then we pray for the person on the other side of that equation, that they would go through the same process, but that both of us would not count on each other to wait for doing our part that you've called us to, that you would give us the patience and the grace, because Jesus, you did not preserve yourself from being walked on by those that you loved more deeply than we can imagine. And so we pray that we would not presume to spare ourselves from being walked on by those that we love, but that we would allow for that, and at the same time speak truth, and at the same time see truth in ourselves. There's just so much here, Jesus, that I don't even know what to pray for. There's just too many things that are coming to mind. So Holy Spirit, would you intervene right now, and would you express to the Father my heart, put my heart in line with you, put all of our hearts in line with you in light of this issue, and help us to live out our marriages and all of our relationships in a way that that reflects who Christ is and how he lived in his ministry here on earth and what he wants for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, guys. Well, just as a reminder, if you would like some help finding a local Bible-teaching, truth-seeking church in your area, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. I'd be happy to just to get on Google and help you with that. If you'd like, if you think I can be useful in that. I want to thank Paul Powers and Francisco Ruiz of the Retro Rewind podcast for their conversation with me today. That was a lot of fun. As well as Winston Crutchfield for taking us back into the long box for some apocalyptic Scooby-Doo. What the crap? Anyway, stay tuned for... Thank you, Winston. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it anyway, Katja from the Netherlands will be returning with another audiobook review, and I'll be reviewing the Wonder Woman movie, which is long awaited. Not just this production, we've been waiting for a long time. There have been failed attempts at getting this Wonder Woman movie to happen. It's finally here, and for my tastes, it looks very promising. But I don't know. I've loved, as you guys know, Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman: Dawn of Justice. Loved those movies. But Suicide Squad was like, this is kind of a mixed jumble of weird post-production interference. It's what it felt like. Tonally, it was, I don't know what was going on there. Definitely had some, you know, some good things, and I definitely enjoyed a good chunk of it. But I'm hoping that this the vision of this is not messed with in post-production, that they respect the director enough to really allow us to get a more pure version of her vision for this movie than I think we got for Suicide Squad, and hopefully that'll help. Hopefully that'll be a little bit more on target with what I like, if I'm just speaking selfishly, guys. Anyway, so that's my plan, and then I'll be presenting my personal wish list and some of your wish list items as well for this year's E3 video game publicity event. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was Profit Motive, a funny Ferengi episode. What'd you think, Kim? Was it actually funny, or was it just quote-unquote funny?
You know, when we were going into this one, I was kind of dreading it, because I remembered having seen it before. But on a second viewing, I found it more fun than stupid.
Yeah. The gist is, the Grand Nagus, Zek, he's a quark, that guy, comes to the station. And he has a bunch of new rules he's created, new rules of acquisition, which is basically the Ferengi Bible. And of course, the Ferengi have always been like their sacred rules of acquisition are things like exploitation begins at home, and once you have your money, you never give it back, and like goofy things. Basically, with the Ferengi, you gotta think it's like opposite day. It's like bizarro. It's, you know, it's goofy because none of it makes logical sense. Like the mirror universe when they're having fun with it. And that's what this episode mostly is. And as long as you can accept it like that, you can have fun with it. And so now he's got new rules, and there are, you know, rules that we would call decent morals. You know, money rusts, but family is forever. You know, basically love your neighbor, beatitudes,
yes,
kind of stuff.
It's all about altruism and compassion.
And so, of course, to the Ferengi, Quark and Rom are just, like, freaking out. Because basically what he's doing is, he has rewritten their Bible to say the exact opposite. So he's introducing grand heresies. And so the rest of the episode is trying to figure out what happened to him. And we eventually find out. Oh, should I go ahead and say it or let them freak? Because it's near the end, so.
I don't know. But I think one of the things that really helped with this episode on the second view, now that I think about it, is that now I know the characters. Because the first time I saw it.
Oh, it was kind of isolated?
I think I was just. I wasn't big into Deep Space Nine. Yeah. I caught it like starting at the 10-minute mark, and it was just kind of this is kind of.
Yeah, if you don't know who Quark and Rom are, then just yeah.
But yeah, knowing the characters and seeing the characters go through this and have their own little moments and being able to appreciate the Quark Rom relationship,
yeah,
that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mostly for comedy and. And I think there's a lot of moments that work, and the story itself is very, very simplistic and, again, silly and completely forgettable because this never even comes up again. The closest is this kind of spirit comes up near the end of the show, but in a more natural way.
Yeah, because the Nagus, I'll tell you this, he's not himself.
Yeah.
He has not had an honest change of heart.
Well, to be fair, he's acting completely unlike himself from the very beginning.
He's been phlebotomized.
Yeah. And, yeah, you'll find out what it is. And also there's a subplot, which is, again, largely forgettable, but enjoyable in its own way. Turns out Dr. Bashir has been nominated for some Lifetime Achievement Award in medicine. And
Dax proceeds to be insufferable about this.
Because Dax is the one who did it, and Bashir is pointing out all the time that this is a Lifetime Achievement Award. It's the cap of a long, illustrious career. And she's acting like, well, you deserve to be honored too. And all I'm thinking is, if this is an award for the end of someone's career, not only does it make you, well, it'll be kind of lame if you win it so early that it may, like, well, your career's already peaked.
Very presumptuous, yeah.
It's presumptuous, and it makes him look like a sneaky, unctuous little social climber who's trying to grandfather his way in and then say he's the best because my daddy's the president, kind of. You know, it doesn't make him look good even that he tried. And so she has already hurt his reputation in that community just by submitting him. And he did not ask her to submit it. That's another thing.
Yeah, she nominated him behind his back.
It's like, that's what the bad guys did in Harry Potter. Granted, they had a scheme, but kind of Dax is scheming anyway. So yeah, Dax is pretty annoying in this. If I was going to pick an annoying character, it would be Dax. And considering that this is a Ferengi-centric episode, that should say something.
Yeah, fortunately, we don't actually get much of Dax.
Yeah.
Even in that subplot. There's not much of that subplot. Yeah.
It's basically Dr. Bashir keeps meeting various people who are in their own character-specific ways, trying to encourage him and ask him about it and all that. And, you know, you got Odo and you got O'Brien and, you know, that's interesting.
I also really like the Bashir O'Brien this episode.
Yeah, they're good bros now.
Yeah, I like the developing bromance there.
Oh, and we get our first introduction, by the way, of what's going to become a staple of Deep Space Nine, O'Brien Bashir playing darts.
Yep.
This is where we first see that, and darts will be a regular all throughout, at least to season 6. I don't remember if they do it season 7. But at least all the way through season 6, them playing darts is as regular as TNG, them playing poker.
Oh, and remember, we wanted to talk about Bashir, the unintentional foreshadowing.
Yeah. I hate to give this away so early, but I'll just say there's a big secret that they retcon into Bashir in season 5. And it's like a major thing that redefines everything. And I know in the behind-the-scenes stuff that they did not plan this from the beginning. But man, oh man, when you see Bashir's reaction when he finds out he was nominated, when you know this information later on, and there's other things too about he's secretive about his family, he doesn't really seem to get along with his family, he always acts like he's got little secrets to hide, and he seems kind of obsessive, you know. In this episode, he talks about...
He made a phenomenally dumb mistake on his final medical exam, which
yeah.
is mentioned.
We'll be coming up to that episode too, where he talks into more detail about that. And, you know, things like, oh, we played 106 games of racquetball, Chief, and, you know, and all this, it comes together in an amazing way. It's amazing that they didn't plan it out, because it works so perfectly.
Yeah, they just had a perfect storm with
yeah,
this character.
They just, all these things that seem like these disparate elements, that's, all the things that made him, it's like the Star Wars prequels in reverse, where the prequels turned Obi-Wan into a liar because almost all the inconsistencies came out of Obi-Wan's mouth.
This one, it's almost like it takes all his weird little random quirks and
the things that didn't make any sense
out of them.
Yeah,
yes.
The things that didn't make any sense, like why is he acting like this? Why is he twitchy here? Why does he seem really smart now and really stupid here? All that, and I don't know how deeply they planned it or if they just came up with an idea, but I swear this change that they will make to Bashir in season 5, and again, it comes like halfway through season 5 out of 7. And yet it still colors his entire character, even though most of his story has already been told by that point, or at least a large portion of it. So, and like I say, this moment here was just, I would have sworn this was deliberate foreshadowing if I didn't know that they didn't plan the thing all throughout. But yeah, it's a completely forgettable episode, but it's enjoyable if you like comedy,
yeah,
if you like the Ferengi stuff.
There's absolutely nothing in the overarching plot that you're getting here. But it's fun.
It's good character stuff, especially Quark
yeah.
and Rom.
It's a good one for just you just want some popcorn fluff, basically. It's not a bad episode for that because it's mainly lighter fare. There's not much in the stakes department.
And next time we'll get another episode that is not that meaningful, but is a really good episode and one that I listed as a good episode. If you've never seen Deep Space Nine but want to check it out, it's a good option. This is Chief O'Brien. Basically, what would you call it? Groundhog Day? No, not Groundhog Day. I don't know what you'd call it.
Next?
Well, I guess kind of like Next, yeah, only this is actually good.
Yeah.
So, not exactly like Next. In case you haven't seen it, Next is not a good movie. It's fun to laugh at. The riff tracks is great. So, anyway, next time we see Chief O'Brien in Visionary. See you then.